Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
All right, Entree Architect community, welcome to the backstage area of Context and Clarity. Every Thursday afternoon on Context and Clarity Live, Catherine McPhail and I, and our live audiences that are joining us from all across the internet, we get to talk to a special guest to search for clarity around the things that matter most to you, the architect, no matter what your context is. You may be the employee of a firm that's dreaming of doing your own thing, or you may have had your own firm for a year or 10 years or 20 years, and you're starting to rethink or reimagine what that firm could or maybe even should be. Every week, we cover topics that fall under the broad umbrella of the business of architecture, and they're all the need-to-know topics for the success of entrepreneur architects just like you. If we've never met before, my name is Jeff Eccles, and what you're about to listen to is the audio recording of a conversation that my co-host, Catherine McPhail, and I had to break down this week's Context and Clarity Live conversation. So thanks for joining us as we share our biggest takeaways and look for ways to apply what we heard in the Context and Clarity Live conversation to our own businesses. In this episode of Context and Clarity, we talk about passion and sacrifice. And we talk with Ken Coleman. We talk about the fact that the Entree Architect Community Facebook group is blowing up with the pros and cons, the evils and the promises of AI. Just when I think that we may be moving on to other current events, these artificial intelligence discussions just keep blowing up. And we also recap our Context and Clarity Live conversation with Ken Coleman. Ken is the host of the Ken Coleman Show on the Ramsey Solutions Network, and he's the author of The Proximity Principle, which, not coincidentally, was our Context and Clarity book club book that we read last month. Before we get into it, though, in case you're new around here, thanks for giving the Context and Clarity podcast a try. Second, if you are new around here, you may not know that every weekday morning, we kick Context and Clarity off with what we call our coffee talk. It happens at 9 a.m. Eastern on the Clubhouse app. It's an hour where you can speak. Clubhouse is a voice-only social app where we hear your voice, but we don't see you. There's no posting of anything, no links, nothing like that. It's just conversations. I think it's a really cool way to connect. We have the Context and Clarity Club there inside of Clubhouse for those conversations. So all of that happens before we ever get to our daily Context and Clarity conversations at 4 p.m. Eastern every weekday in the Entree Architect Community Facebook group. Those two places, the Clubhouse app and on Facebook, in the Facebook group, are where every day architects just like you gather to dig into the topic of the day. You can ask questions. You can answer questions. You can share your experience. You can really bring that experience and your curiosity to these conversations about the business of architecture. And that, of course, brings us right back here where we recap Context and Clarity Live. That's the live stream interview show that goes out to Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube on Thursday afternoons. So in addition to everything else that I've mentioned, here on the podcast, we'll continue to give you our hot takes on those interviews. In this episode, Catherine and I will share our takeaways from our Context and Clarity Live interview with Ken Coleman, host of the Ken Coleman Show.
So let's talk about some of the things that are going on,
as I said,
inside the Entree Architect community.
Both the Context and Clarity Live,
because I think,
with
you know,
Ken,
we talked about
also for this
AI
episode and our new
and ChatGPT
a
couple
of
weeks ago, I think it was.
She's in,
and as I was scrolling through,
in addition,
the Entree Architect
Catherine
Hoost Facebook
Hawking
group,
home renovations with the House Maven.
You know, it was like
she's the
probably
CEO
at least six conversations
Architects
about
okay,
AI.
I'm looking forward to giving you a
and or
view
chat
of what's
GPT.
Going on
and was
in the
just,
world of Entree Architects.
You know, that's
so
why I texted you and said, "Hey, should we talk
and
about
listen
this?
In as
should
Catherine
I talk about
and I talk
AI
about
again because
we
just talked about
it?"
But I think we really do
with Ken
need
Coleman,
to.
I agree. I mean, it's just ongoing, and people are getting more and more.
And
I don't know if into it is the right word, but more involved
principle.
With it. I noticed there was somebody who had suggested, and I think it's been a great idea of what was it, a restaurant? They said, ask this visual AI to give them a image of a like a crawfish restaurant or something like that. And so, to me, just designing where you can have there no, you could just do anything. That's kind of more difficult than responding to something. So that would be kind of an interesting way to get a design ideas rolling. You know, is that you ask the AI for something and then you can do something completely different, of course, but at least it's somewhere to start and respond to in some way.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it really is interesting. And at the same time, you know, you have people reacting to that going, oh my gosh, it's going to, you know, what's this going to do to architecture? You know, somebody turned me on to an Instagram account that I started following. And then like the very next day, they posted something about AI. And I think the account is really more aimed towards interior designers, but you know, it's in the same realm. It's in the built environment, you know, design services. And they had this post and it showed an image, you know, here's an interior designer designed living room or something like that. And here's an AI designed living room. And then, you know, it's one of those carousel posts where, you know, slide after slide. And so there's the images and then they kind of talked about AI a little bit and, you know, going back and rereading it, I realized that they were really talking more about, hey, you need to be aware of what's going on. But a couple of slides in, there's one that says how to protect yourself from AI. And that's when my head exploded, right? Because I think that's exactly the wrong attitude. Right. I think this, oh, we're going to stick our head in the sand. We're going to protect ourselves from this. They're tools. They're tools that we have to be aware of. Yes, we have to learn how to use them to our advantage. And, you know, my thought is that these tools are going to really distill, like it or not, they're going to distill the value of the architect. And by that, I mean that the things that are commoditized, and that's, to me, that's construction documents and other things, but I think that's one of the big elephants in the room. The things that are commoditized are going to be further commoditized. They're just going to be destroyed in terms of, you know, holding any sort of value, quote unquote. And the real value that you bring is going to go the opposite direction, right? The things that you do that actually bring value are going to shine brighter than they ever have. And if you don't know what that is, if you can't talk about that, if you can't quote unquote sell that, you're going to be in trouble.
Right. I can also see how these people, there are lots of people who, well, not a lot of people, there are still people who hand draft. They don't even use AutoCAD. And then there are people who still use AutoCAD and they don't use BIM. And so I can see, if you are one of those people who still hand drafts, it would be really hard to embrace AI as a tool because they're not embracing the other tools as tools yet.
Yep. Yep.
So it would feel overwhelming. I feel pretty excited about it as a tool, but as we have previously discussed, there seem to be, you know, different types of people.
Sure. Yeah.
And I was discussing this with my husband and he was saying that he suddenly realized that people talk about the singularity and about robots taking over, but really we are becoming more biotechnical all the time. So it's like we are going to be kind of powered by these robots, but it's not us and them. It's more like we are becoming more automated. So if you look at it that way, as an architect, I am becoming more automated with the building information modeling systems, but then also with this AI generated thing, because I am, I don't want to say I am commanding it, but I am using it and it's helping me with my output, you know, so it's not like I am separate from it. It's just one of the, anyway, but you know, like Apple Watches and other things as we become more online, our bodies online, you know, how right now the Apple Watch can tell what's going on with your heartbeat and all these other things. Anyway, just kind of interesting to think about it merging. We're merging into one rather than it being an us and them situation.
Right. Yeah, it is. I was, as you're saying that, I was thinking about the fact that I'm going down the rabbit hole. Right? I'm watching TikTok creators that are trying out different tools and are thinking critically about use cases and things like that. And I'm learning from those and I'm experimenting. I'm trying different things. And the other night I was doing a little bit of research and I watched one of those TikToks and the creator was talking about an AI similar to ChatGPT, but you would ask it questions, it would give you an answer, and then it would cite the sources. And I went, wow, that's pretty amazing, because what I'm doing right now is I'm trying to compile some information. And so I'm Googling, right? I'm Googling, and then I have to make note of what the sources are. You know, where's a good source for this and that and the other, and, you know, drop that in my notes and stuff like that. Or I can just use this layer, this AI layer, that's essentially doing the exact same thing, but here are the five sources for that information. It's like, how much more efficient is that? That saves me, that could save me an hour for each one of my topics or inquiries. It's amazing. So, you know, I agree. I mean, we have to, I guess we don't have to your point, there are going to be different people doing different things, but in the spirit of efficiency, in the spirit of you know, our businesses, I think it makes sense. At least it does for me. I also have a neighbor that is a woodworker that creates exquisite things out of wood that doesn't use any sort of pneumatic anything, right? He uses hand tools. He has some lathes and table saws and things like that, but he is truly, truly crafting beautiful things from wood. There's no way that he is going to frame a house, right? He's not going to pull out a pneumatic nailer and start banging 2x4s together and or 2x6s or whatever and use a pneumatic nailer. And the people that are doing that are probably not, you know, doing what he's doing over there. And there's definitely a value to his level of craft. So, you know, I think we need to understand our strengths, but still, you know, he's not going to, my neighbor's name is Tom. Tom's not going to turn down the best tool for the job, right? To accomplish what it is that he wants to accomplish in the way that he wants to do it. So,
I mean, it does kind of take all types, but I just don't see somebody who's hand drawing suddenly deciding to catch up.
Right. I agree. Yeah. Yeah. And Tom's not going to suddenly start using a pneumatic nailer, even though those have been around for a long time now, but I think that's a good point. It's an important point. So I love the fact that in our community, there's more and more awareness every day and more discussion every day about these AI tools and ChatGPT. And my hope is that a lot of us start to figure out, like I've got a whole notes file right now where I'm working on workflows. You know, if I do this in this one and I take that over here and I use that here and, you know, so from point A to point B, these are the different AI tools that I can use to get there. My hope is that we go, hey, you know, here are things that we can do as architects to really provide a better client experience, or, you know, whatever it is that we need to accomplish.
You know, what would be really amazing is if I could hire a virtual assistant who's actually a virtual assistant, not just a remote assistant, an actual virtual assistant who then just does all of my administrative stuff without me really having to worry about it. They kind of anticipate my needs and ask me relevant questions. I give them that information and then all my administrative stuff is just done.
You know, if that doesn't exist, we can't be far from it. I saw an ad in the last week or so. I forget what the name of the platform was, but it was basically a project management app that claims to be AI driven or something like that, that schedules and reschedules tasks on your calendar and things like that, based on the way that you actually get work done. You know, I don't know about you, but I can put things in my calendar and go, oh yeah, I didn't actually get that done. Well, apparently it's gonna reshuffle things and reschedule things to make sure that I get the important things done, et cetera.
That would be so awesome. And if you're running late, you say, call so-and-so and reschedule for my appointment for this other day, and then reschedule my book. And then it could give you notices. You have this meeting in 10 minutes or the traffic. This is what it happens right now already where I don't even know who it is, but these announcements come onto my screen saying traffic is light. You will get there in 19 minutes, which has gotten me to meetings that I forgot I had so many times. Not all the time, but probably once every couple months, I see that pop up.
The tools are there, and maybe it's a matter of stringing them together. It's certainly a matter of learning to use them, because how many of us actually use the tools that we have to anywhere near their potential? But when we talked to Ken Coleman, one of the things he talked about was passion. I think he brought it up because I asked him. He came up with this idea of the proximity principle. And for those of you that are listening, if you don't know what the proximity principle is, it's basically the idea of asking yourself, who do I need to know? Whatever my big goal is, I need to accomplish this big goal. The book itself is framed around the idea of finding your dream job or making a career change, but it's super easy to change that context. This works anywhere. And so the questions you have to ask are, who do I need to know? Where do I need to be? And what are the things that I need to start doing?
You can't will yourself to do the work. You can't say, I'm going to get up at 5 a.m. every day this year, and I'm going to do this, this, and this. I'm going to do the cold shower, and then I'm going to do the workout. I'm going to do this and this. You can say all that, but you will not do it if you don't care deeply about what's on the other side of that. So the word here is passion. And passion gets... honestly, it gets beat up. I see people in my space on social media going, no, don't follow your passion. And I get it. But passion, as you guys know, is a fundamental part of my methodology. Talent's what we do best. Passion is what we love to do. This is a form of work. It's a task, a function, a role. Mission is what motivates us. In other words, results that matter deeply to me. Passion and mission together is what really drives action. So what I mean by passion is the root word of passion is in the Latin is pati, P-A-T-I. And there's another word in German, which it escapes me right now. But what's fun about the German word for passion and the Latin word for passion is they both mean basically the same thing, and it means to suffer. But we kind of think of passion as a romantic love, or, well, I just really enjoy it. But real passion, the root of that, and the true understanding of it is that I am willing to suffer all manner of things. I'll suffer patience. I'll suffer rejection. I'll suffer failure. And I'll do all of that because of the outcome, because of the love. I love this, and I care about the results that it produces. So the answer to why they don't do it is because they don't want it bad enough. They don't want it bad enough.
It is that simple, right? It's three steps. Simple. Simple doesn't mean easy, but it's three simple steps. Why aren't more people doing it? So he said one of the problems is that not being easy, right? It's the fact that you have to put in the work. And that's when he started talking about the passion. You know, if you've got this passion for this big goal that we're talking about, that means that you have to be willing to sacrifice. And the way that I took that, and I took it this way because I've heard him on other interviews talking about it, but it's that idea that, man, I've got to do this, and I've got to do this, and I've got to do this. I'm not really thrilled about doing those things. I'm not really super passionate about those things, but that's the stuff that has to be done to get me to that point. And maybe to help with the segue to go from the AI to this is, if I had tools, right? If I had an, like you said, a virtual assistant like that, that could take care of some of those things that they don't bring me energy, right? They sap my energy. I don't want to do those things. I don't want to reschedule that or make that phone, you know, all that. I don't have time to. I'm driving, whatever the situation is. How fantastic would that be? And maybe it limits the amount of sacrifice that we have to make in order to achieve those goals that we're passionate about.
Yeah, I don't think it's the same thing though, because that would be for once you've already gotten your dream job and you are so busy being the head honcho or very important person. So then that's why you have your support staff, right? And they used to have them. If you think about those women who used to help those executives, and they probably still do, but in the old TV shows.
Executive assistant or something like that.
Well, they were their secretaries back then, I think, but they did everything for them. They knew everything. They got the presents for their wives and kids and whatever. It was like they took care of their whole lives. And I so many times have thought that is exactly what I need. And if I could get a virtual one where who just knows me and can anticipate my needs and takes care of everything and does it really well because it's actually a machine and not a person who has a heart attack or whatever inconvenient thing would happen to my assistant. I don't know. That would be so great. And I think eventually we won't have to learn how to use it so much. I don't even know what it is, a project management system that is just too, it requires too much from me. I feel like I'm just going to just swallow the money I spent on it because I don't want to spend any more time dealing with it. I mean, it's only me. I don't have to put in all, anyway, I don't, it turns out it's just too much for me, but I'm hoping that one of these days it'll just be all automatic. Like it used to be word processors. You had to put in all of the information before you started your document. Do you remember that? Like the L120, R20, and the whole thing. And now all you have to do is start the program and just write, and all that's taken care of for you. So I'm assuming it'll be kind of a Macified virtual assistant.
Yeah, it has to move in that direction. It has to move. And this, I think this is part of what scares people, is the further it moves towards being intuitive, the more accessible it becomes. Right. And I've seen that in some people's comments. Oh, well, if I design custom homes and a client, if I design custom homes using Revit, and I'm just making this up, this does not exist at this point, but if I design custom homes using Revit and Revit has a built-in AI, that's going to take some number of prompts, and then it's going to generate construction documents on its own that meet code, that have all the wall sections and all the window schedules and all those things, but it's just going to do that quote unquote automatically, then why can't a client just buy Revit and do that? Well, the answer will be they can, but they won't know all the prompts, right? They won't understand. It'll be intuitive to some level, but your expertise is still going to be necessary to get to the desired point. But I'm going back to TikTok. I was watching a creator last night that was explaining, and I think the way he said it was explaining how to establish your relationship with ChatGPT, which was like, oh, okay, I'm going to have a relationship with this AI now.
Was it that guy who said, like, you say this and I, like, you want this, yeah, and I want this.
I think I
saw that video. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. And to me, it's sort of like the R20 and, you know, or R2 and whatever, but it's setting up the roles, right? It's setting the ground rules, and it's moving us towards the best possible outcome here.
Yeah, which is awesome. I was pretty excited about that video.
Yeah. And I think
it was you who was saying, like, the person who's going to be, or the job that's going to be valued, one of the jobs is the one who can give ChatGPT the right prompts to get the information that you want. I mean, that's going to be the key, is learning how to do that, which is similar to learning how to research a paper. I mean, it's really no different than things we learned in school, high school or college, that is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Being the one who knows how to use the tool the best gets the best output.
I just have to laugh because back when I was in college, there would be a couple books. First of all, people took books out of the library, so not all the books would be there that you wanted. And so if you didn't get the book you wanted, because there was no other source of information that you had to go for this book. Well, this book's really talks about what I want, but it's 1929 was written, whereas this book was 1968, was a little newer. You know, like the idea that we just had to kind of vet the material that we had available to us, which was simply what was on the shelf, and someone else could take the book that we wanted. It's so different than that now. It's so exciting.
Oh yeah, it absolutely is. So I was doing something with ChatGPT over the weekend, and I was asking it, first I asked it to summarize, give me a detailed summary of this book, and give me a detailed summary of this book. Now compare and contrast those two. Now, I forget what I said, but create a unique outline, taking the points from this book and that book and applying it to this situation. And it is fascinating to watch that work, or I mean, watching it work means really looking at a blinking cursor, but to see the output that comes from that. And then the thing is, I still have to take that and turn it into something that's usable, because you look at it and it's, some of it's very vague, you know, you have to go deeper. Some of it, you know, does not read like a human being would read, et cetera. So you still got to do a lot of work on it, but in terms of doing the initial legwork and all of that, absolutely amazing.
It's amazing. Just the internet's amazing, but you know, I won't get into that again, but getting back to the passion. So my notes say that the real passion means that I'm willing to suffer all the manner of things to achieve whatever that outcome is that I want, which I get, because I have been, you know, just slogging through basic goal achievement to get to the big goal that I needed to do that I didn't want to do, but I did it. And I guess that would be the suffering. I did that stuff because I really wanted the outcome. Why did he say he was sick of being the only guy at his pity party? Do you remember him saying that? Anyway, talent plus passion plus mission equals purpose. This also came up, and we talked about it a little bit, but this also came up, this passion idea, I think is related to this passion idea about architects living, sleeping, eating, drinking architecture, and that's what we need to do. And that came up in the Facebook group, and I just, in a similar way that I kind of reacted to this idea that I'm supposed to be passionate every day, get out of my bed, I can't wait to get to my work. I mean, I feel that way when I'm excited about achieving a different goal, like whatever the goal may be. But once I've achieved the goal, then I'm working on that thing that I've set up for myself.
Yeah. So I think I'm the only person at my own pity party. I think that came from, he brought up the term from neuroscience that basically says, you know, when you become more aware of something, and the first example he used was the buying the car, right? So you buy this car that you didn't know that much about, you hadn't seen that many, and all of a sudden, once you buy it, you see that's the only car. You see tons of those on the road, right? And I think he went from there to talking about, you know, you get to, if you say, hey, you know, that none of this ever works out for me, et cetera, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And you create your own pity party, right? That you're, I think that's where that came from. And the thing, I think one of the things that I said at that point in the conversation was that I was worried that some of us, maybe many of us, are not that passionate about what we're doing. And I think the reality of what happens a lot of times is we start doing something, we start building something, we get into the day-to-day of it, we get into the reality of it, we get into the routine of it, and it just becomes this repetitive, you know, I'm checking these boxes today. And I've told this story before of waking up one morning and asking myself, when did I decide to build this social media agency? And that had happened, you know, I had gotten to the point where I was doing social media consulting for a number of architecture firms across the country, and had two, sometimes three, sometimes four people helping me with all of that. And I woke up one day, you know, when did I decide I was going to do this? I didn't. I never decided I was going to do that. I was doing that because I kept saying yes. You know, clients asked, oh, can you do this? Yeah, I can do that. We can do that for you. And, you know, that day when I woke up and I asked that question, that was the realization. It's like, I didn't want to do this, right? I wasn't passionate about this. And so maybe, you know, maybe it's me projecting my own experience on others, but that was one of the things that concerns me is how many people are waking up in the morning going, you know, I've got to go, you know, draw another whatever or design another whatever. And that's not what I signed up for, right? That's not what I was trying to do, which leads me to the question, what do we need to do to pivot? And no judgment, obviously, against any of that, because I've been there, done that. But what do we need to do to pivot and focus on the things that we really do want to build and the things that we really do want, you know, that we are passionate? It's not, I don't think it ever takes away the waking up on Monday morning and go, okay, I've got a red line, this set of CDs, you know, that's just part of it, right? That's part of the sacrifice, I guess. But, and I'm with you. I do not think that every architect has to live, breathe, bleed architecture 24 hours a day, everything else be damned in order to be an architect. In fact, I've got questions, right? If that's what you do, if that's what you think, I've got questions. I don't think that fits the human condition very well, honestly.
No, it doesn't. I mean, I read that and it doesn't allow any space for children or friends or spouses or any relationships or anything. It's just 100% architecture. And I guess one reason I love being an architect is because there are so many different aspects to it. There's like running the business or so many different kinds of buildings and client relationships and everything. So it's enough to keep me interested in. There's so many different things to learn that it's very interesting to me. But at the same time, I understand there are different types of architects. And I guess I just happen to be one of those more generally curious about the world architects, and it expands beyond just architecture. But sometimes architects make me feel a little bit like I'm not really, my heart's really not in it because it's not what I eat, live, breathe. And, you know, I love a lot of other things.
Well, I think that's a really good point, though. You know, if you're that one-dimensional, you know, and I realize I might be on thin ice here, but I mean, if you're that one-dimensional, and like you said, I mean, the profession is incredibly diverse in the problems that you solve and the types of projects and the types of clients and all of those things. If you're operating in the I eat, sleep, breathe, whatever mode, first of all, again, I've got questions. I don't think you're honest. I don't think you're being honest about it. I'm just calling you out right now, and you can leave us a rating, you can send us a message, whatever, but I'm calling you out right now. I do not think you're honest about it. If that's your story and you're sticking to it, how do you learn about anything? Cultures, building science, AI, how do you learn about anything, right? If you are that one-dimensional, I don't buy it.
You know, maybe it's something we need to tell ourselves or pretend is true so that it can justify not getting paid much money for doing what we do for 60, 70 hours a week or something like that, right? Like, well, if you love it, just like it goes back to that whole SIARC discussion, like, you know, this is what you're lucky to be a part of this thing because everybody's so passionate about it. And you could be with people who just are 100% architecture. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not choosing to build my life like that anymore. So,
you know, if you love it, you'll never work a day in your life, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I am all about finding the thing that you're passionate about. And the proximity principle that we just read, we just talked to Ken Coleman, the author, it's all about that, right? Ken Coleman's story starts, you know, as he explained it, starts when he was 16. He thought he wanted to get into politics. At some point he realized, this isn't really what I thought it was going to be. This isn't what I really wanted. So he, you know, came to a point of reckoning and said, hey, you know, broadcasting, and originally it was sports. And he did that for a while. He learned, you know, he did all the things that surrounded himself by the people all the different types of people that he talks about and put himself in the right places and all that, did the work. And then one day realized, yeah, I don't think sports is really the thing. The sports broadcasting is really the thing that I want. So he pivoted and now he's still in broadcasting, but it's a different type. And I think having a focus on what you really want to do is absolutely important. But if that's, you know, if that, I'm gonna call it one-dimensional. If you're that one-dimensional, how do you know when to pivot? Right. If you love it so much that you never work a day in your life, fantastic. That's awesome. But remember, it's probably more than a year ago or so now when we talked about, do you have a job, a hobby, or a business? Are you building a business? Because that's going to take you out of the one track mind, right? You have to put in the work. You have to do the stuff. That's not architecture.
No, it's not. I mean, that's a funny thing too about, like, I just think people just say that because they like to say that to be, I agree. They're just hardcore architects. You know, that's it. Their whole life is architecture. Well, that's great. I mean, I love plants. Those also relate to architecture. I love ghosts. I think to me, those relate to architecture. I know this is too, like, sounds kind of wacky for me to say that, but one thing I love about old houses is the stories and the history that took place within them. You know, so that's the thing that I like about it. And the whole idea of people's stories. People who just say, I just love architecture and I have my own firm. Like, you can't only love architecture because you have to do all the other stuff. You have to do the marketing and learn about that. You have to do the accounting, or you have to have at least stuff to give to your accountant. You have to run the business, like you said, and build a business and, you know, a legacy firm and the whole, there's so much that has nothing to do with architecture. So, I mean, it's just impossible for that to actually be true.
I know this is, I know number one, we need to wrap this up because we're running out of time, but also this is a rabbit hole that we should chase another day. But I also think that those comments are what get people to architecture school, you know, convince a young person to be passionate, really, really passionate about something. They get into architecture, like, gosh, you know, I'll play all the stereotypes. I'm going to wear black. I'm going to be up all night. I'm going to do this in studio, and I'm going to be dedicated to my art and all of this. And that also doesn't match up with reality. And I see that in the students that I teach, that when they have that realization, it's like, oh my gosh, it's like, this is what I thought this was going to be. This is what it is in school. And then, oh, look, the city county council has to approve this. I've got to present this to a group of neighbors who don't care about my passion for this, that, or the other, or this material, or, you know, Corten steel or whatever. They don't want their sidewalks to be stained, but I don't know. I guess I'm beating that. The horse of I don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't buy it either. I just feel like it can't be true. But if you happen to be an architect who says, well, I have a lot of other interests, then you're just not in the club anymore, sort of thing. Or you're just kind of looked at one.
Whatever happened to the Leonardo da Vinci, the Renaissance man?
Exactly.
Shouldn't architects be the Renaissance people?
We should be. I feel like we should be. And we can bring our sense of design and puzzle solving and curiosity to so many different things in the world, like putting a meal out on a table, the way it's all composed and everything else, like designing a menu or wrapping a present. I mean, anything in your life can be.
You know, honestly, the way you said that, it reminded me, and I know this may seem very staged, but it's not. It reminds me, bringing me back to the proximity principle. That's one of the things I like about the book, is he talks about the five types of people, the five types of places, and the four action items. And it's almost like this puzzle, right? Oh, okay. I can start to think about this, and how do I find these people, you know, this type and this type and this type, and how do I do this in this place? And then what do I need to do? And that's, you know, a little bit of insight, I guess, on some of the types of books that I like. So, okay, I can go through this and go step one, step two, step three, kind of.
Give you some guidance. Yeah. I mean, I have to admit, after reading the proximity principle, I realized that if I want to get more involved with the old houses that are on the market or recently sold or whatever, I need to go talk to the people who are in town, who have an office in town, who claim to be the old house realtors. I mean, I really just need to go talk to them, and I just need to. So the proximity principle made me remember that, yeah, I do need to take some action to get what I want.
Again, it's simple. It's a simple framework. Doesn't mean it's easy, because you have to do the things. And you know, I raise my hand to this too. There are a lot of times I go, yeah, I'm not doing the things that I need to do. But yeah, check it out. If you want to know more about or hear more of this conversation that we had with Ken Coleman, maybe the easiest thing to do is to go over to the Entre Architect YouTube channel. There is a playlist for all of the Context and Clarity Live conversations, including our conversation with Ken Coleman, the author of The Proximity Principle, and let us know. You can comment over there on YouTube. You can comment and give us a rating, give us feedback wherever you're listening to this now. We appreciate that. We want that because number one, it helps other architects find this podcast and find Context and Clarity and expose them to these great guests that we have every week that share their knowledge, share their expertise, share their wisdom with us. So please give us that feedback, give us those ratings, all of those things. We appreciate you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for participating in everything that is Context and Clarity. As always, please be well, stay safe, keep those around you safe and well. Find a little bit of time to breathe and relax. Find a way to rejuvenate. We do Context and Clarity every weekday, so you have to pace yourself. Been doing this for almost 3 years now. So thank you for going along this journey with us. Thanks for making this possible. And I say this a lot too. If it weren't for you, we wouldn't have had this conversation with Ken Coleman. We would not have read his book, The Proximity Principle. So thank you for this opportunity. And we hope that you'll listen again next week. All right. Well, now you know what we thought and what we're going to do with what we learned. But what did you think? What did we miss? I really hope that there was some big takeaway from either the Context and Clarity Live conversation or our breakdown here that will help you with your business. DM me on Instagram or Twitter and let me know what your takeaways are. You can find me on all the socials at @Jeff_Eccles. That's @JEFF_ECHOLS. So send me a message and let me know what your takeaway was. And if you want more conversations like this, subscribe to the Context and Clarity podcast where you're listening right now and leave us an honest review and a rating. Those things really do help us to get the message out and help more architects just like you. Oh, and also now you can follow us on Instagram as well as get a heads up on everything that's coming up. There we're @Context_Clarity. In our next episode, Catherine and I will host Context and Clarity Live again with a new special guest and a new theme for the week. And we'll come right back here, backstage again, to break it all down for you again. There's always something new to look forward to. And if you love content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people like you that care about the built environment. And it's the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know that you're going to find something there that interests you. You can learn more at GableMedia.com. That's GABLMedia.com. And finally, if the topic of today's episode is of particular interest to you and you'd like to dig deeper into it, then join me over in the Entre Architect Community Facebook group. That's where every weekday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern, I host Context and Clarity Conversations. And we take these topics like this, and we dig deeper. We have a conversation in real time to try to find more clarity around the things that matter most to you. So thanks for listening. I hope our time together has inspired you to think about your community, your practice, and how you can support those around you. Catherine and I will be back for our next episode. And in the meantime, I hope you'll join me and the Entre Architect community on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern so that we can help each other find more clarity around the topics that matter most, no matter what your context may be.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.